if you were a non-union contractor, you were called a scab a lot of the times. You know, like a lot of the union workers would hate you because you're showing up and you're doing a better job. You're getting more done at a more cost-effective rate than they are. And so they'd hate you. So they'd, you know, they just treat you like shit.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the show. I've got a great guest with me, Reed Coverdale. He's a libertarian YouTuber and a blue-collar guy, and that's what I wanted to talk to him about today. Reed, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me on, Brad. I've been a fan for a while, so it's cool.
Yeah, I mean, we won't relitigate our ongoing fight over tanks and whether tanks should be legal for private citizenry, but we did just do a live stream over on your YouTube page that people can check out if they want to hear that debate a little bit. I will put the link to your YouTube page in the description of this episode, so folks, if you like Reed, want to hear more about what he's got to say, check it out, subscribe. He's got really good looking guests, I've got to say. There was this one guy who was just on the other day.
Tom Woods? Is that who you're thinking of?
No, something with a B.
Oh, let's see. That must have been Eric Brakey you're thinking of. No, it was you.
Anyway, I was really interested because I can say that I spent a lot of time with what I'd call beltway libertarians or professional libertarians. But I always find the perspective of libertarians that actually do jobs and work more interesting on some things, because I'm very lucky, right, to get to write about policy all day and work at a libertarian think tank and write columns. But there are a lot of libertarian podcasters and stuff that have real jobs and do real work in the real world, and that's you. So can you just tell us what you do?
Yeah, I'm a heavy equipment truck driver, so I move oversized machinery around the western states. I've had my CDL since I was 18, got it without doing any schooling, and I got it in preparation for a job that I just needed for moving trucks around because I was a line worker for about 6 years. And then I decided I wanted to get into trucking full time. So I'm actually just coming up on 1 year of doing nothing but truck driving, but I really like it. My job is very varied. I almost never go into the same place twice. I'm bringing things to mines and to crazy job sites. I get to go to the ports and pick things up right on the ocean. And I get to load and unload all the equipment. And, you know, I'm moving like multi-million dollar equipment sometimes because these machines are very expensive and very, very technical and very specific. So it's a pretty cool job and I really enjoy it.
And does it involve like crazy hours or any of the kind of things you hear about with truckers?
Yeah, I mean, I usually work at least 60 hours a week, usually 5 or 6 days a week. And I'm gone like all week and then I come back for the weekend. Sometimes I reset my hours where I'm on the job site though. Like if I'm out in California or Montana, if I run out of hours, I'll just take a day off and hang out and then keep going from there.
What do you mean run out of hours? Is the 60 hours a cap?
So it's 70 hours in an 8-day period. So
is that the law or your job?
That's the law. You can't work any more than that. And I don't think any jobs will cut it off shorter than the law. I think the law pretty much draws the line. But you're allowed to work 14 hours a day. Out of those 14 hours, you're allowed to drive 11 hours a day. And then you have to take a 10-hour reset between every day. But in an 8-day period, you can't work any more than 70 hours. So you either have to wait a day so that one day drops off at the beginning of that 7-day period so you can add another one on, or you stop for 34 hours and that'll just erase your clock and you can start over.
Is it hard to become a trucker? I know that you got to get some sort of license. And is this one of the jobs where the government makes you jump through all sorts of hoops?
Yeah, it's very hard. I got it in 2013. And even back then, it was really hard. They have three different tests you got to take, or really four different tests. You have the knowledge test, which really isn't that hard. Then you have the pre-trip exam, which is just walking around the truck. And they have like, I don't know, literally like 200 items you have to check on the truck. And if you forget more than like 5 or 6 of them, they can fail you. And so that's what they usually fail people on. Most people go 5 or 6 times just to get the pre-trip done. And then after that, you have a parking test. So you have to prove you can jack it around a 90-degree angle, parallel park it, and then you do a road test. Those two people don't fail that often. It's really the pre-trip. And if you have some narc as a cop, like who's doing the test with you, they can, I mean, they'll fail you for anything. If they just don't like you, you know, they'll find something and fail you. And it's ridiculous. At my job, when I was doing line work back in New Hampshire, I actually brought a lot of people for their tests, and I trained a lot of people, and most of them would go 5 or 6 times just for the pre-trip exam.
Yeah, that sounds tough. But do you think that, just kind of even zooming out a little, do we make it too difficult for people to get started in the blue collar workforce, right? Because it seems like if you don't go to college, or if you graduate high school or go to a 2-year college or anything, we should have another clear on-ramp, streamlined to get you into some sort of skilled trade or profession like trucking. But instead, it seems like you have to jump through all these hoops. And is that why so many people end up going to get gender studies degrees and that they never use?
Yeah. So, you know, back in 2013, it was a lot easier than it is to get that the license now. Now they're trying to make you go to school. I know some states are requiring that now. It's like a $10,000. It's like a $6,000 to $10,000 degree, basically, to get your CDL. And I got paid to get my CDL because I worked for a company. I worked at a lumber yard when I was in high school, and I just stayed there for 1 year after high school. And they had trucks, so they would let me drive them around the yard, and then some guys would take me out, and we'd go do deliveries. And that was just how I learned how to drive, and I was literally on the clock. Now they want you to go get this multi-$1,000 degree when you're usually just right out of high school. You don't have any money. You can't even like test the job out to see if you like it. You know, you're dropping a ton of money on something that you're hypothetically hoping you'll enjoy. And so, yeah, why go into the workforce if you have to go to school? Because that's why a lot of people would go into the workforce, is to avoid going to school, because they'd rather just work with their hands and do common sense work. They don't like being in a classroom. And so, yeah, absolutely. It is discouraging people from joining. And the big problem is mostly what I was just mentioning about how you can't tell if you like something or not. That's why I've always liked doing blue collar work, because you can try it for 3 to 6 months or whatever. And then if you're like, yeah, I don't really like this, then you don't have to do it. And, you know, with a lot of jobs, you can still do on-site training. So you can try it for a few months and see if you like the general scope of the job, and then say, okay, I want to get these certifications. But little by little, they're trying to make it so that you have to have schooling for all these things, and it's not cheap. And usually you have to have the schooling before you can even get a job with the pushes that they're making. So yeah, it's just completely destroying the appeal that blue collar work has in the first place.
Yeah, where's that coming from, this push for the multi-$1,000 degree? I mean, is that the government, and who wins from that? It's not like that really must improve safety. Is that like meant to keep people out so that some people can benefit, or where's that coming from?
Yeah, I mean, it's not making anyone better for sure. Like, drivers are worse than they've ever been. They can't back up, they can't shift, they're terrible, but they have way more training than previous drivers did. So obviously it's not fixing some systemic issue with training. But it seems like it's usually the left that's always pushing for more regulations, for more training. And then once you have this degree that costs thousands of dollars, then you have an excuse to say, hey, we need to subsidize this so this person can actually get a foothold in one of these jobs. It's like, well, no, you don't even need that schooling in the first place. You know, this is the big misconception, that we need all these things at all, but they push for them, and then you have a block in the road in front of you to get to whatever job you want. So then you have a great excuse for the state to come in and subsidize it. I don't see any reason for this other than wanting the state to control everything. And, you know, the left always claims that they don't want the state to control everything. They want the workers to control everything. But it's like, well, not really. I mean, this is just more centralization and more state power. And it's really dumb. It hurts the people that they claim they want to help the most. So it's completely counterproductive.
Yeah. And can you maybe just talk a little bit about the way that various regulations make it harder to do your job? Is it the kind of thing where you have to end up, I've heard horror stories about dumb because the thing about regulations that people don't understand is regulations are always passed by people who don't understand the subject they're regulating, right? Like Congress or state legislatures, they can't be experts in medicine, housing, transportation, technology, in all the subcategories within all those categories. Yet thereby becoming regulators and expanding the bureaucratic state, essentially making the rules for a bunch of industries and fields that they don't understand. And that leads to dysfunction in many cases. But has that been your experience at all?
Yeah, I mean, both in trucking and in doing line work, the lumber yard I worked in high school, we kind of didn't obey the rules there. So that one's a little bit of a, that one's an exception. But yeah, when I got into line work when I was, when I was 19, there were just so many dumb regulations that were put in there to make you safer and to protect things, whether it's the environment or the workers or the equipment or whatever. But what they would do is it had this unintended effect of actually making you less safe, because when you have so many safety regulations, you start caring more about whether or not you're complying than whether or not you're being safe. You take your eye off the danger and it's just about, oh, did I remember to do this? Oh, did I remember? Because so many of these safety things really don't protect you. They just look good. And so someone can come up on a job site and fine you, you know, if you're not doing something that looks good. A great example is one time I was picking up a shipping container, and it's a 20-foot long, 8-foot wide, 8-foot tall shipping container. And so I was on top of it, hooking chains up to a crane so we could pick it up. And so I'm on top of this giant sturdy platform, and this guy comes running across the yard and he's like, "You need to have a safety harness on." And I was like, "Okay, where do you want me to connect it to?" He's like, "Well, you've got those points in the corner that you can connect it to." And I said, "Okay, well, I'm 6 feet tall. My lanyard's 5 feet long, and the shipping container's 8 feet tall. So if I fall off, it'll keep me from rolling after I hit the ground. That's all that my safety harness is going to do." And he was like, "Well, I guess you need to get a step ladder out then." I was like, "Okay, do I need to be harnessed in if I'm on the step ladder?" And he said, "No, you don't need to be harnessed in on the step ladder." So now, instead of standing on top of this giant shipping crate, I'm standing on top of a 6-foot step ladder, you know, that's super rickety and can fall over way more easily, trying to reach up and, you know, connect these chains to this crane. So it's so obviously not about actually making you safer. It's just that you're within the confines that they've set up for you to follow. And it's like that with everything, with the environment, you know, all the environmental protections that they put in, most of them would force you to be more harmful to the environment in order to have all the equipment and all the material in a swamp that you're working in or something. Like, you have to burn way more diesel to bring in all the equipment that you need. And it's sitting in the swamp for 2 weeks and it kills everything that it's sitting on top of, when you could have just driven a machine through a little, you know, a little stream and just planted a pole and been done. And then with trucking, you've probably heard about how everything's electronic now. You don't have paper logs anymore. You can't go 1 second over your time. If you do, and then, you know, you're at a weigh station or something later and a cop sees it, he can write you up a violation for it. So if you're like 5 minutes down the road from your house and you run out of driving hours, by law, you're supposed to stop right there for 10 hours and reset and then drive the remaining 5 minutes home. By the law. I mean, so some of these trucks, you can't duck the system. Like, you can't unplug the ELD. It's built into the GPS and it picks up whenever you're moving more than 5 miles per hour. So what that does is it incentivizes people to move around somewhere, go down a road at 4.5 miles per hour just to sneak in the last little bit. So now you're creating a hazard. You're making people do stupid stuff. You're making them either rush to get somewhere before their clock runs out or lose out on, or if they know they can't make it to the next destination because they're going to be 10 minutes over time, they have to stop an hour early and waste all this time that they could have potentially used. So all these regulations do is make you dumber and act like a robot, and it has the exact opposite intended effect.
How do we take the ideas of liberty and sell them to your average person? Hi, my name is Brian Nichols, sales executive and host of The Brian Nichols Show. And as the director of sales development in the greater telecommunications and cybersecurity sector, I've spent years working with C-level executives to help them future-proof their company's infrastructure for an uncertain future. And at The Brian Nichols Show, I'm taking that industry experience and bringing it to the liberty movement. Each episode of The Brian Nichols Show features conversations with leading voices in their respective fields of expertise, ranging from CEOs to economists, elected officials, professors, and more. And instead of focusing on libertarians being right, we're teaching the basic fundamentals of sales and their application in the world of politics, teaching you how to ask better questions to help change people's minds. So, where can you find the program? Head to BrianNicholsShow.com or search your favorite podcast app for the program, and then hit that subscribe button to get three phenomenal episodes that'll make you a better advocate for liberty today.
Yeah, it's always funny because it seems like all these big government nanny state regulations always end up having all these second, third order consequences that are, in most cases, outweighing whatever benefit they were hoping to accomplish. And you'd think that they would, at some point, have some degree of humility. But they're like, oh, well, there's a problem and our regulation didn't work and made it worse, so I guess we need another regulation. Do you think at some point it will just become too difficult and too cumbersome to do a lot of these jobs, that there will be either a forced reckoning with all the red tape or a shortage of people willing to wade through it all?
Probably both. Like I would not go back and do line work now. I got out of it. It was great money. Like I was making six figures a year when I was as young as 24. You know, I was already making six figures. And I do make a little bit less trucking, but it's just so much more freeing compared to what you had to go through. Because it makes the, you know, I like to enjoy my job. I like to, want to go to work and do what I'm doing, but it would just make it miserable, because it made your job harder. You were always nervous about someone looking over your shoulder and reporting you for breaking some dumb violation or something. And you also were way less productive, and that makes you feel kind of worthless at the end of the day when you can't get anything done because the system has stopped you from being productive. So it seems like there has to be a reckoning at some point. I can't imagine that it'll just continue at its current rate, but you're already seeing people stop doing these jobs because they're just not fun anymore. It's not worth the trade-off, especially because if you want to be a blue collar worker using your hands, getting stuff done, just jumping in and getting on the project instead of being an office worker, they're slowly making blue collar work more like white collar work. They're just adding so much bureaucracy, so much downtime, so much red tape that you have to deal with that you were trying to avoid in the first place.
Yeah. I mean, it seems at that point you would have just become, you know, the mid-level insurance salesperson to begin with.
Right.
One other thing I wanted to ask you about is because I just actually had a great episode with our mutual friend, Hannah Cox, talking about unions and how they really can be harmful for workers and the economy. I know you said that the unions don't really affect, when we were talking about this before, don't really affect your trucking job, but they've infected some of your past work. So can you talk about unions? I mean, have they advanced your interests as a blue collar guy?
No. And as you said, like with trucking, I haven't noticed any effects. There probably are some, I just don't know about it because I work for a guy who owns five trucks and we're non-union, so we don't have to deal with them at all. But when I was in line work, we were a private contractor. We were not union, but we were working for unionized utilities, and people would leave the utilities even though they were making more money, because it was just so obnoxious. It would get to the point where if you're a welder, you know, you needed an electrician to come plug in your welding machine because you're just a welder, you're not an electrician, so you can't use the plug. And that's not an exaggeration, like stuff like that would happen. It just encouraged laziness. It encouraged like this Gestapo type, like partisan spying on each other to see if someone was violating the rules and doing something that they weren't supposed to, and you were encouraged to turn them in to, you know, the company or whatever, like all this just stupid stuff that was really detrimental to the workplace, and it would paralyze these utilities. They would not get anything done. That's why they had to have us, because we didn't have as many dumb rules as they did. We were allowed to work in the rain, and we were allowed to work when it's more than 90 degrees out. We were allowed to work longer hours. We were allowed to do more dangerous stuff. And, you know, as I already told you, like, our job already had enough stupid rules, but theirs were 10 times as bad. And there's also this hierarchy that would form, you know, like, if you were a non-union contractor, you were called a scab a lot of the times. You know, like, a lot of the union workers would hate you because you're showing up and you're doing a better job. You're getting more done at a more cost-effective rate than they are. And so they'd hate you. So they'd, you know, they just treat you like shit. So I would never join a union. And I watched your episode with Hannah, and I think she made a good point about right to work states, because I used to be a huge proponent of right to work states. And I do think it is kind of unlibertarian at the same time. It's a kind of a messy subject, but I would voluntarily never, ever join a union. In some ways, I think they've become what they were originally designed to oppose. They've basically become corporations, and they squash you if you're an independent worker who wants to get ahead in the field. So yeah, I won't be ever joining a union. And my dad's actually a public school teacher, and he's the same way. He'll never join even the local union, but certainly the NEA or anything like that. So the anti-union stuff kind of goes back a long way in my family, but I've internalized it after working and seeing the effects of them in practice.
Well, yeah, and that's an interesting question too, right? Because I think that we hear a lot about talk from politicians, and whether it's progressives like Bernie Sanders or Republicans like Trump, about, you know, blue collar work, and it's time to stand up for workers and not corporations. And, you know, I could do my really terrible Bernie impression, but I think you know what I'm talking about. But as you know, I'm not the target audience for that rhetoric. Neither are probably a lot of my listeners, but somebody like you is. When Bernie Sanders talking about unions and workers and blue collar jobs, or Biden or Trump, I mean, how does all that rhetoric from politicians about blue collar jobs and all that, and how they're going to help, how does that resonate with you, having witnessed the practical results?
Well, you're kind of speaking to it at the beginning, how, you know, you're a theoretical guy, you've not actually done the work, but you're saying the right things. So when I hear you say what you say, like, I don't have any judgment towards you, because you're right. When someone like Bernie Sanders is spouting off all this shit when he's never been out in the field, and, you know, he probably doesn't talk to that many people who have been, he just has this idea in his head that this is what these people want to hear. It really pisses me off, because, you know, claiming that you're on my side and then just pushing for more and more bullshit that actually enables corporations. Because, you know, the funny thing is, especially with line work, there used to be all these tiny little companies that were contractors that would work for the utilities. They've slowly consolidated and phased out because they can't keep up with the regulatory requirements, whether it's environmental or safety. They just don't have enough money. So they're getting absorbed by larger corporations. Now, pretty much one utility runs all of New England, except for Maine, you know? So, is that what progressives want? They always claim that they're against big business, but all of their policies crush competition and make it easier for the big guy to survive. And it should be super obvious, but somehow it's not. And I think it's because a lot of them are, like you said, they're just pen pushing politicians who haven't actually ever had to do anything. Although it is ironic, you know, like AOC was a bartender or a waitress or something. Like, so
bartender, I think, yeah.
Some of them have been in these jobs, but I just think that they're willing to parrot these talking points because they're popular. So some of them actually, I think, do know better. They're just going along with it because it's sort of what you were talking about in my episode on my show, where if you parrot certain talking points with and you're a partisan instead of trying to take things at face value, it's a lot easier to gain traction, and that's probably why they do it.
Well, and you mentioned something interesting a moment ago about competition actually being good for workers. And that's interesting to me because I certainly believe that, but a lot of people think of markets, or they think of capitalism as, oh, well, profit motive and competition and capitalism, it creates a lot of money, it grows the economy, but it will hurt workers. They'll get taken advantage of. So we need to have government protecting them. It sounds like your experience has been the opposite of that.
Yeah, I mean, because competition is also for worker, you know, the worker's experience, like how much you're getting paid, how good the equipment is at your company, how many hours you work, how your boss treats you. Competition isn't a one-way street. And so if you're a company that's doing better because you can make a lot of money, you're going to have the opportunity to be able to pay your employees more, give them better equipment, give them more vacation time, give them better benefits, whatever. And the more regulatory burdens that the state puts on, the less those companies are going to be able to give to their workers. And, you know, this is, I don't think businesses are benevolent or something. I don't know why so many progressives say that. Like, what, do you just trust businesses to be generous with their money? And I'm like, well, no, not all of them. But even if you're talking about some penny pinching, greedy business, they're still going to be able to give their workers more if they have more capital. Like, we're just dealing in reality here. If you put more regulations on a greedy business, you think that's suddenly going to make them become more generous and want to give more to their employees? Like, no, they're just going to penny pinch even more. They're going to be worse in the aspects that you hate them for already. So yeah, I mean, it's a complete disconnect that I just can't understand, but it seems to come a lot from people who haven't worked in multiple different places in a blue collar field and seen what different companies can give to different employees and make it worthwhile working there.
Yeah, I just wrote about this the other day, but Amazon gave 500,000 employees a raise. Why did they do that? I actually wrote about why they did, because they explained why. It wasn't because the minimum wage went up. It did not. It wasn't because Jeff Bezos is a charitable man and wanted to give back to the community. It's because Target and Costco were raising their wages because workers are really in demand right now as they're trying to scale up production as lockdowns end, and Amazon's got to compete. So they got to, if Target goes to $16 an hour, Amazon wants to compete for the same pool of workers and keep its current workers from jumping ship. It's got to match or exceed that and go to $17 an hour. And so people seem to think, not understand that when workers get screwed over, it's usually because there's not actually many alternatives for them to go to. There's just a monopoly, and then they kind of take whatever they can get. And those monopolies are usually actually caused by the government.
Yeah, and a lot of these greedy big businesses would pay the price under a free market where they don't pay the price if the government's bailing them out. Because some people think, like, if the government's giving these businesses money, that they'll somehow be more generous. But to your point, if they're not worried about competition, why are they going to raise the wages of their workers? Like, the leftists are right that these businessmen want to make as much money as possible. But if you're protecting them with the government, they're not going to have to raise their employees' wages to stay competitive, so they'll just keep more money. It's just mind-boggling, man.
It's funny too, because the progressive, you know, labor activists will say businesses are greedy, and that's why we need a minimum wage hike to $15 an hour. And then it's like the Pikachu meme of shocked, because then the next headline is McDonald's passed entire cost of minimum wage hikes onto consumers by raising prices, new study shows. And the progressive is just like the Pikachu meme of surprise. And it's like, well, you're right that they're greedy. I mean, self-interest is what drives market capitalism, but it's not an exception when there's government intervention. What you need to do is align the interests of workers and the businesses, and that's what happens in competitive free markets. So I think that's a good place to kind of leave it. I appreciate you giving us your perspective. You've got a lot of experience that I certainly don't have. But I am curious. I wonder if having traveled so much, you've got a particularly interesting food take for the audience.
So just a surprising food that I like, or what exactly are you looking for?
Yeah, it's usually either something that people like that other people think is gross, or something that, like, for example, I like skim milk, which people think is pretty nasty. I like well done steak with ketchup, which people think is gross, or something other people love that you actually don't like. Like, I hate all fish and seafood, and a lot of people love it, and I think it's disgusting. So, ooh. I don't know. You got something for us?
I love raw oysters. No, you, that must make you feel really good.
Yeah. I mean, I guess power to you, but.
So, I got a little bit of a story behind that, and this actually isn't recent, but when I think I was trying to remember how old I was. I was pretty young. I was 14, I think. And I beat the record at a restaurant in Maryland for the most raw oysters anyone had eaten. Do you want to take a guess at how many it was?
25. 40. It's people who can't see. He's gesturing.
Going up. 50? Up.
75.
94.
Oh, my God.
When I was 14, it was pretty bad. Yeah.
All right. Well, Mr. 94 Oysters. That's a unique food tag. I'll give you that. Reed Coverdale, everybody, thanks so much for coming on. You guys can all check him out on his YouTube channel, which will be linked below. Thanks so much.
Thank you.